Welcome to episode 71 of the Draft Lab Podcast. I'm your captain of Crazy Town, Josh Field, aka J2S Josh, and I'm once again joined by all-time 17 Lands Trophy leader, Cranky Chris Palmiotti, aka Floridamon. We enjoyed our nice little holiday break, but we'd ease it back in and to give you the answers you're looking for, literally, because it's a mailbag episode. We'll try to mix in some strategy ones with the usual oddball things you send me. And also, to those of you who continue to send me weird sexual messages, you will not be getting those answered here. Just try to be creative so I at least get a laugh out of them. How's it going today, Chris?
It's going well. Happy 2023. I hope you had a good holiday season filled with many yummy treats and family time, I guess.
I haven't been sober since like December 12th.
That's quite the streak. It's a little unfortunate to go into a new year with like things being a little boring in the Magic world. There's the decathlon stuff going on, and I think every other event makes me want to literally tear my eyes out. Some of them are okay, it looks like, maybe. But yeah, at least there's a new season reset, climbing on bro, but seems like a good time to clear out their mailbag while there's a little bit of a lull ahead of the new set.
Oh, I feel it's important to note that we both have impersonators at this point. Chris has one in Discord, so if you get weird messages from one of us, I can assure you it is not us. We will never ask for money or say super creepy things to you.
Yeah, I'm working with the Discord authorities to try to get them shut down, but apparently someone with my profile picture and exact same name, just different like little ID numbers behind it, have been low-key harassing people in various Discords that I've been a part of, so sorry if you're a victim of that. Report them and it'll probably help move the process along.
But does that mean we've officially made it?
I think so. That's exactly what my brother said. Oh, you're getting big enough to where people are trying to mess with your life.
All the joys.
Yeah. So now we can just autopilot, right? Now we don't even have to think about anything. We could just phone it in every week.
Weekly update. We're neck deep in the decathlon. I can't even begin to tell you how much fun Chris is having in it. Honestly, if you just care about winning, the best strategy for any of them is to play at the very beginning of each step. It's filled with tons of casual players and the meta hasn't developed, so you can usually just win on play skill differential.
Yeah, I played the mixed Dominaria Seal today, 172, with a very like medium black-white deck that I realized after I posted the trophy picture, I only had 2-2 drops, so that's how much I was invested. So yeah, it's not too hard to trophy if you play tight and build just like a consistent deck.
Right. Bounty-wise, we're still waiting on someone to crack Dora off of Ramos Dragon Engine. I saw a Bieber fan giving it a run, but couldn't get Ramos to survive long enough to pull it off. So close, buddy. So close.
Dang. I've had a couple of Dora activations since the last recording, but Ramos has been nowhere to be seen.
Like you said before, we're kind of out of crazy things to ask for out of bro, so we're waiting to come up with some new bounties whenever something relevant drops. Maybe we'll do some Kaldheim ones later or something. Who knows?
Oh man, trying to go after a bounty during the arena open takes some chutzpah. I like it.
All right. So, you want me to start answering some of the questions that we get from our wonderful listeners?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
What is your opinion on mulliganing in Limited? What goes into your decisions for it?
That's actually a pretty big question in a small amount of words, but mulliganing is one of the most complicated and challenging decisions you're going to make in a game of Magic, which sounds kind of weird. It's easy when it's easy, right? Oh, obviously I got no lands, mulligan, or this is the perfect starting hand, keep. But when it's hard, it's very difficult, and you're always weighing the risk of how much is this extra card worth. And I think what it always comes down to is what is your deck trying to do? And so if you're an aggressive deck and you have four lands and then like 2-4 drops into 5-drop, probably not going to make the cut in most cases, because aggressive decks usually rely on closing the game fast and chipping in early damage while your opponent maybe is caught off guard or can't 2-for-1 and leave up some protection spells or something. On the opposite side, if your whole plan is to survive into the late game and you draw a hand that leaves you open to getting beat down by aggro, sorcery speed, clunky interaction, or just like a bunch of air, as I think people call it, you know, just like 2-mana cantrips that don't really do much to the board, things like that, you might want to consider mulliganing. I think going down a card is very painful, obviously, in Limited, but I think people overestimate how much that hurts you versus how much having a very clunky starting hand hurts your chances of winning. But it's all set dependent, it's all build dependent. But that's why the Keep a Mulligan channel in the Discord is one of my favorites. Just one screenshot, but there's so much discussion to be had in these screenshots. I don't know how useful that is. It's so general, but
One of the big things is the set and what's going on in there. And obviously in best of three, you have a better idea before you make a decision. But in best of one, let's say you have a hand with four land and three four drops, right? If you're playing original Dominaria, you're probably fine. But if you're playing one of the more recent sets that requires interacting the first couple turns and you're in the draw, you can't really keep that ever.
Yeah, like if you play War of the Spark and they're going to drop like a 3-mana Planeswalker into a 4-mana Planeswalker, you cannot have nothing on the board at that point, right? So
right. Or in Bro, like if you're just like, nah, I'm not going to play anything till turn 4, you're so far behind.
Yeah, that's when your opponent goes Goblin into any 2-drop into like Junkyard Genius or Strong Bull. And you're like, okay, well, there goes that game.
There's a lot more we could get into that, but we'll just have to do a whole episode on it, realistically, to really do it justice.
Yeah, and it's hard because like the heuristics for mulliganing in a vacuum are easy to kind of just throw out there. They're not really meaningful out of context. And like Josh said, mulliganing in the blind versus games 2 and 3, if you play best of three, is like night and day, right? Like if you know that they have a Sky Strike Officer and you don't have ways to block it effectively and you're on the draw, you can't really keep a hand that just like has no way to interact with that card if they have it in their opening hand. Unless you have like, you know, a perfect mix of lands and spells and you're just trying to high roll them not having it. But there's so many things you have to consider that's like relying on the deck, relying on the set, relying on what your deck's going to do. It's very hard to answer it, but I think a general comment I would make is however long you spend on thinking about your mulligan or keep, if it's murky, if you're unsure what to do, add a little extra time to thinking about it, because I guarantee you, you're not considering all of the costs and benefits of mulling versus keeping, since it's such a complex decision.
Yeah, and there's something that I would like to get into at some point, just not in just a mailbag episode, that your actual skill level should make you consider different options at this point. If, say, you're a lower skill level player, you should probably try to spike more than somebody who's like, oh, I know I'm going to win through tight plays, so I should mulligan to try to get a little bit better.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you feel like you can grab value from decision making, you feel better about going down a card. You just need the opportunity to make those better decisions, right? So that's another way to think of it. Good point, Josh.
It really is being honest to yourself, and that's really hard for players to evaluate themselves properly.
Yeah.
Next question. What is your favorite Magic card, and do you have any stories associated with that? For me, being the card-loving person that I am, Ancestral Recall. Can't really go wrong with 3 cards for 1 blue mana, right? And funny story on that one. So that was obviously my favorite card since I was playing Magic in the early days. But like in the early 2000s, I think it was like 2003, and I was at Gen Con, and I was talking to Mark Poole, and I was just joking around. I was like, hey, do you have any Ancestral Recall artist proofs for sale? You know, because he just had a few random artist proofs. So he's like, oh, yeah, but I'm only selling them as a set of all my beta ones, so you'd have to buy the whole set. And I was like, I was joking, but what, huh? And he's like, yeah, $200. And I'm like, okay.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, so it had like Birds of Paradise, Balance, a set of islands, etc. It was like, okay, sweet. Great guy.
So by saying Ancestral Recall is your favorite card, does that imply that Dirt League card draw stuff is your favorite thing to be doing in Magic? Or you just have like more of a nostalgic attachment to that era and that's just a card that stuck out during that era?
I just loved paying 1 blue mana and drawing 3 cards. I mean, does that not do it for you?
So my answer to that question is maybe possibly Royal Assassin. I was playing back in the day as well. I didn't know what I was doing. I was very young, right? I was like 7 or something.
Were you icing?
No, see, that's the thing. I can't even remember. I just remember having attachment to that card at a young age. It's 1 black-black for 1/1, and I think you tap it and it destroys target tap creature. Is that correct? That's my memory.
That is.
Of it at least. Excellent. Okay. So for those who don't know, who aren't ancient like us, I just always thought that card was such a cool design, flavor-wise. I'm drawn to black decks in general. I would say that's like my favorite card just because it's associated with my earliest memories of Magic and felt like a cool, nifty card that was fragile but powerful at the same time.
See, I learned something about you today, Chris.
Yeah, I see. Thank you for the question, whoever asked it.
Which brings us to the next one. Who would win in a cage match with the whole Draft Lab in it?
It's a hard one. I think we could say who would lose. All the love to him, but I think Benji's a lover, not a fighter.
Right.
I would rule him out. I think Josh and Equal have the size advantages, for sure.
But I probably have like 100 pounds on him.
Yeah. So it depends. Is it a pretty big arena? Could we run around Josh, tire him out a little bit, maybe? I don't know.
I can go do 10Ks like it's nothing, so...
Like it's nothing? What's your pace? Come on. Like it's nothing?
I've just done the Disney ones.
Oh, okay. Oh, so, I mean, it doesn't count when every half mile you're stopping for some big goods.
That's not how they work.
I assume they're trying to sell you something.
They just charge you like $200 to run.
Oh, I see. That makes sense.
And I get a cool medal at the end.
I think it depends on how angry I am that day is like a direct correlation to my power level in a fight.
You gotta go Super Saiyan on everybody?
Yeah, I have like a limit break bar. So if that thing's full, watch out, everyone. I feel like DeFore could just take a beating. I feel like he's been to enough punk shows and been in enough pits where he's just like heart and skin. So I don't know. It'd be
a good time.
Yeah. I think Icky would be like maybe the craftiest fighter. I think he would have a good game plan. Who knows? Maybe we just have to give it a go. See what happens.
All right. How do you decide how many lands to run in your draft deck?
Oh, it's just like the mulligan question. A lot of discussion has gone into this and can continue to go into this. And we probably still don't leave with a good heuristic around it, if you will.
Oh, here's a heuristic. If you are just in the dark on the format and you don't think about it at all, just run 17.
Yeah, it's always a good place to start. I would argue best of one on Arena if you have an aggro deck at the end of the draft. You could probably, like, if your curve average is below 3, maybe on the lower, like, below 2.5 even, something like that, you could probably be safe with 16 lands. I have never really paid attention to, like, average mana value versus lands. I'm sure that's maybe a way you can try to standardize it across sets. It's probably a good metric to use. But that doesn't really count things like prototype costs, could throw that off, or things with activate abilities that you have to pay mana for, or like kicker cost. So there's a lot of things that go into the set. How many things ramp, like things making power zones, for example, how many ways to spend mana, card draw naturally attached to cards. If you're drawing a lot of cards, you probably want more lands on average because you're not going to run out of gas, I should say, versus a lot of Selesnya decks, for example, in almost any set has problems. Once they dump their hand, that's kind of it. You're in top deck mode, so I'm always a little cautious of running too many lands in Selesnya decks versus something like a Dimir deck. You usually have a lot of ways to get card advantage and use your mana. So again, very contextual, but I think a lot of things that make me want more lands over less lands is having very powerful cards at like the 4, 5, 6 drop slot, and you want to curve into them consistently every game. You want to be able to cast them. That makes me want more lands. If I can draw a lot of cards, it makes me want more lands. If I have ways to pitch lands, it makes me want to have more lands. You really want to make sure you hit your first 3 or 4 consistently. And then after that is when you start deciding, do I need my 6th, 7th, 8th, you know, whatever. And so when you have the flexibility within your deck to make that decision in game versus during the deck building stage, it helps a lot. Another thing, it also depends on your like color requirements. You can't really skimp on lands too much if you're playing 2 colors and you have like double pips in each color throughout your deck. You kind of need critical mass of sources for each. So even if your curve is relatively low, if a lot of your 3 drops are colorless white-white and then colorless red-red or something, you can't really cut too many sources. Conversely, if you're playing a monocolor deck, you don't really need the 17th land in most cases, maybe not even the 16th land, because like those extra lands really help you find both colors in a lot of instances, and you don't really need that the quantity of lands. So if you're playing an all red deck, you're gonna only find mountains anyway. So you usually shave a land or two just based off of the fact that you're playing one color.
And that's maybe we'll do a much deeper dive into it and give you a lot of different heuristics at some point. It's hard to just do that in the context of a short mailbag episode.
Yeah, but one of the value of these types of episodes is it lets us build our kind of idea list a bit. And we get a better understanding of what listeners want to hear us go through in more depth in later episodes. So keep on asking these questions for sure, even if our answers are going to be a little high level in these types of settings.
What are the S tier draft snacks?
Ooh, I don't know if coffee counts as a snack, but I don't think there's anything better. You see it every morning when I'm streaming. I'm a different person when that coffee arrives versus when I'm doing it pre-coffee. And some may ask, why do you start before having coffee? Because my girlfriend's obviously sleeping and what am I going to make my own coffee? That's ridiculous.
As long as my number of drafts equals my number of cups of coffee, I'm usually in a good place.
Whoa, that's a lot, dude. I would be wired.
That is probably why I have trouble sleeping sometimes.
Yeah, might have something to do with it. I would say on stream, I try to avoid eating too much so you don't see me snack too often.
Oh, you love slamming a protein bar.
I mean, I need to eat something or else I'm just going to pass out. But off stream, if there's ever a moment where I like had the perfect setup, I love popcorn. It's like my favorite snack, full stop. And even though like I would have my greasy popcorn hand as my left hand and then my mouse hand as my right hand. And then that would be my perfect setup, I think.
Man, do not, I have to warn you about this. You know, I know you don't ever want to go there, ever get the popcorn at Disney.
Why?
It smells so good. Gets you every time you walk by. Oh, because it's got that fresh popcorn smell. Then you get that popcorn. It is not that fresh popcorn.
Well, I'm sure the smell is just being pumped out of some vent right near the snack cart.
Along with the Prozac and whatever else in there.
Yeah, right.
Hey, everybody. Some people ask me, like, why do you go to Disney all the time? And it's like, if you were just going to go someplace random, wouldn't you rather go to a place where everybody has to be nice to you?
Right. Like, obviously, you're like a pass holder.
Right.
You've already invested in it. So it's just like going there versus going to a market is the same thing, more or less, to you, right?
It's good exercise to go wander around. Yeah. And yeah, like today, we got bored, just went to Animal Kingdom. We went, sat down, shared a beef and chicken bowl at Avatar. And then we just, you know, went over to the safari and then walked through the little thing to check out the tigers.
Yeah.
It cuts it into small bits, so you're not, like, spending all day. You're not, like, out there all hot, waiting in lines and everything like that. And, you know, and everybody's friendly.
What does this have to do with your snacking?
It was the popcorn thing.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to expand upon this question a little bit. What's your favorite candy for, like, a movie? You were like a fruity, chewy kind of guy. You were chocolate all day, man. Are you somewhere in between?
If I'm buying the snacks at the theater, I'm getting the cookie dough bites.
Okay.
Or
okay.
I'm getting popcorn.
Man of culture, I see.
Sometimes I'll get some of the hot snacks. They're so overpriced, like $30 for a big hot pretzel. And you're like, what?
Yeah. There's this chain of movie theaters called the Alamo Draft House. It's a little bougie out here in the Bay Area. I don't know where else they exist. I know there's one in L.A. But they have this Mexican vanilla shake that is obscenely expensive. It's like $9 or something, but it has like a nice like cinnamon powder on it. And it's so dang good. I have to do it every time I go to one of those establishments. It
does sound good.
Yeah. I'm a Sour Patch Kid, man, through and through. I will take that over almost any candy any day.
Here's the trick. I don't buy Sour Patch at the movie theater. I just eat them out of Michelle's purse because she always has a bag of them in there. So I was like,
no bag survives too long around me.
Well, she limits how many I'm allowed to eat. She's like, gives me that look. And yeah, I'm like, all right.
Gotcha.
Next question. How do you approach building a sealed pool? The main things, what are your power cards? What is your mana fixing? What can you splash? What are your main colors? And you just kind of have to do a bunch of different builds and look at them and see, hey, can I fill in the gaps for what's needed here? Or is this going to be missing out against something? And also, you do need to go, can this deck beat another sealed deck? Sometimes you just have to play the low to the ground deck that you're just trying to run over somebody before they set up.
Yeah, I do the old thing where I just like sort by rares just to see what rares I'm working with. And any of the like super good or playable rares, I just kind of drop them in the deck window for reference. And then I do like the most zoomed out view I can, depending on arena or MTG or whatever. And I just like look color and get a quick like gut check on like what colors are deep and look like they have a lot of good playables. And then I scroll all the way to the end where you get all the artifacts and the fixing and the dual color stuff. And just from doing that scan, unless you have a really difficult seal pool, you can usually like rule out one color at least, maybe two if you're lucky. Sometimes it's a slam dunk and you're like, oh, all my rares are in these two colors and they're super deep, easy. And then you just focus on like refining that two color deck. But I think it always helps when you can like mentally cut out a color because it's so much to take in right up front. Considering all five colors kind of at once the entire time is really difficult. So I try to eliminate one color, maybe two as fast as possible, just to save brain space for the actual build portion. Getting into details in terms of what type of decks I prefer, I think sealed in general is considered, I don't want to say a slower format because I think aggressive decks are really good in sealed. If they come together, they just come together less often, which makes the speed of the game slower on average. But I wouldn't be like, oh, it's a slow format, therefore I should also try to do the dirtly thing. If my pool has a very good aggressive build, I actually prefer that because you're going to get under a lot of people in any given sealed event. But yeah, don't go mid-range and sealed, right? You're going to be facing people with love bombs. So if you can't go aggressive, basically if your pool has a lot of powerful stuff, try to build your deck to where you can survive and go into the late game and do all the powerful stuff. if it doesn't, I would play like a mediocre aggro deck versus a slightly better mid-range deck in sealed in most situations.
All right. Does Chris actually like anybody, or is he just chronically mad at the world?
Is that an actual question?
That was an actual question.
Who submitted it? What mother... Well, I officially like one less person now, whoever they are. No, I like people. I am chronically mad at the world, though. I think those two things aren't mutually exclusive, though. I hate most of my friends a lot of the time, but that doesn't mean they're not my friends. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's where I actually fall.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. My honest take is I know I'm cut from a weird cloth and I get angry very easily, but I do think the rest of the world could meet me, maybe not halfway, but, you know, come towards me a little bit and be a little less sensitive about things and just speak their mind a little bit more. And just, I think it'd be a better world if people just said what they were believing a bit more and just got a little less offended on average. I don't think it's ever really that bad to be truthful and straightforward, but where it becomes a problem is like the reaction people have. Obviously, there's some balance to talking about touchy subjects or disagreeing with someone. You have to be convincing in some way, so it doesn't make a lot of sense just to yell at them if you're trying to really change their mind, though I find yelling at people cathartic. I do think it's a disservice to people if you try to avoid conflict to a fault. And so I'm probably on one extreme, and I think the world on average is slightly past where they need to be in terms of avoiding conflict. So maybe they come like 20% my way, I go 80% their way. We'd find a happy medium.
Sounds good. All right. What kind of dogs do you guys have? One of them is a Shih Tzu. Her name is Princess Sophia McFuzzy Pants the First. She's just as prissy as you would expect. It's basically like having a cat. And then we also have Soledad, or Soli for short. And she is a Great Dane Pit Bull mix. Probably the sweetest dog you'll ever meet. Chris?
Yeah, if you watch my stream, you have seen my dog, probably, Tolly, numerous times by now. But for those who haven't, he is kind of a mix mutt of like a Chihuahua, Corgi, something else in there. He doesn't have the greatest gum genetics, so he only has about a third of his teeth left. But man, the fewer teeth you get, the more pressure each one has, I've learned. So, you know, basic physics. But yeah, he's getting a little more docile in his later years. I think he's like 11 or 12 now. And he's my best friend. And if anyone ever talks bad about him, I will ban you.
He's truly the star of the show.
He is. His breath smells like salmon, though, because we put salmon in one of his food. And that's like probably the one thing I'd change about him.
You could just give him some greenies or something.
We try.
Does not work.
Too powerful. That's like trying to put out a forest fire with a squirt bottle.
Our last question, wings. Dry rub or wet? Why not both?
Ribs or wings?
Wings.
Do people have dry rub wings?
They do.
I never really had too much experience with those, so I'm going to go wet on wings, but dry rub all day on ribs. I know that's not part of the question, but that's my answer.
It's all good. I'm like, hey, you can get dry rub wings and then dip them too.
That's true. That's true. Choose your own adventure, if you will. You ever go Buffalo Wild Wings back in the day? I mean, I think they're still around. I just don't live by one anymore.
I live in Orlando. There's plenty.
That's true. The garlic parmesan was always my favorite.
Those are pretty solid.
I don't know if it's the Italian in me coming out, but man, oh man, I get down many a wings.
Well, maybe we can have a good old fashioned wing off next time you're here.
I'll practice. Did you ever go to like, I think it was Gator's Dockside that had nickel wings on Wednesdays?
What they changed it to was all you can eat wings on Mondays, and then Wednesdays was all you can eat boneless wings. Which are just pre-dipped chicken nuggets.
Right.
But they're still good. Just, you have to acknowledge the fact they are just pre-dipped chicken nuggets.
It blows my mind that I lived during a time where people could smoke in restaurants and we could go to a restaurant and get 5-cent wings.
Right.
How old am I?
They always get so mad at you when you're just in there just eating the wings. And it's like, I don't know what to tell you.
Don't have this promotion. Have a minimum. Do something. It's not my fault.
And when they're like, you're going to eat 50 wings. You're like, don't know what to tell you. Keep bringing them.
Yeah. They should have a thing where they only, like, I don't know. Obviously, it didn't last long because they don't do it anymore. But
the Gators by me went out of business.
Oh, well, it makes sense. They're selling their wings for 5 cents.
And even though all you could eat was only like $10.99. And it's like, okay, sure. All right. That brings us to cool play of the week. Kiefer was doing a practice Dom DMU bro draft and used In Bowls' clutches to steal and immediately ultimate his opponent's Jaya Fiery Negotiator. He followed that up by playing a single removal spell to write Geki their entire board.
That's just gross, Kiefer. What are you doing, bro?
Wrecking dreams.
Why you gotta be so mean?
He even put a video from his opponent's perspective. That's the mean part.
I saw that. I was watching it. I realized, I was like, who is this person? Okay, yeah. Ooh, wow, look, that's spicy. And then I realized it was like the reverse perspective for Kiefer. I was like, oh, okay.
Isn't that just wrong to post your opponent's perspective of getting kicked in the balls?
I mean, I think it's the best way to do it.
Speaking of kicking in the balls, we're here for Chris's bad beat, which isn't necessarily a bad beat so much as a bad, well, Chris.
Well, do you know that meme where it's like a stick figure and they're driving a bicycle and they're making some comment on something? They're like representing an entity or something. And then the next picture of the comic is they're basically sticking a stick in their own spokes and like tripping and falling on the ground and then blaming society.
Yes.
That was basically what I did in bro form, because I went to Gix's Caress My Opponent and I was looking at their hand. I was playing like a mono black 4X corrupt deck, as Lord Amon does. Their hand was a little underwhelming. They had like Lay Down the Arms and a Behemoth and stuff. And I just was like, okay, well, the 4/4 seems the most threatening. And I grab it, which again is the 2 green green Behemoth. And for the first time in the history of this format, huh?
Obstinate Bailoff.
Sorry, whatever. Yeah, and for the first time in this format across all games ever played, the Bailoff activation got triggered and they just get to play it.
Oh no, it's been triggered before, because if they play Painful Quandary, you can pitch the Bailoff to it and put the Bailoff into play.
Okay, true, true, true. Yeah, so I basically played a 3 mana sorcery speed, make a Power Stone, and give my opponent a 4/4, gain 4 life, and I still won the match, so that's good. But
it was like you played a show and tell, but only put a Power Stone into play.
Right, right. A little embarrassing, but I figured the world needed to know.
Thanks for coming clean to us all, Chris.
You're welcome. Like I said, just try and be honest over here.
Come check out our totally free Discord, where you can get deck techs, pick advice, check out trophy decks, discuss limited, or just chill. You can find the Draft Lab on Twitch at J2S Josh when hell freezes over, Florida Mund, probably not Icky either, Eagle TV occasionally, to Jordan, and to Four. Don't forget to check out mtgazone.com for awesome strategy articles by the Draft Lab. Well, that's 71 episodes in, and we're almost the age where we forget that we are old.